Cool. All right. Well, then we'll go to Zach. Hey, Dave, I'm looking for some advice if you'd be able to provide some. I've been overweight my whole life, started dieting 4 months ago, have lost 30 kilograms. Good stuff. I was 105 kilograms, now sitting at 75 kilograms at 5'9". However, I'm not sure whether now to carry on cutting as I'm down to 1600 calories a day or lean bulk to build muscle then cut. Any help would be appreciated. I'll let you start this one, Abel.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. What was the beginning of this again? So basically, he was cutting for a long time and he's just wondering if he should continue or.
Yeah, so he was overweight his whole life. He dropped from 105 kilograms to 75 kilograms over 4 months. So, 4 months isn't too long. So that's a lot of weight to lose. He's now on 1600 calories a day and he wants to know should he lean bulk or build muscle. Unfortunately, we don't have an idea of his body fat percentage, but
It's 75 kilos, you said now?
currently, yeah.
And how tall was he? Did he say that?
5'9".
Five. Oh, okay. This is always a, this is actually a much trickier question than a lot of people make it out to be. Like I had a video even where I tried to make the whole like cut or bulk question like very, very simple as if it's just a matter of what your body fat percentage is. And yeah, in a different universe where people were completely rational creatures, it might be that simple. But when someone is in this situation, this is the classic example where probably at 5'9, 75 kilos, he is so it's like me being at like 84 kilos or something like that. That's not too skinny. That's not too lean. Like I could definitely keep cutting if I'm not at my goal yet, especially when I was less trained. But 4 months of dieting, that's not trivial. It's not like a crazy long contest prep or something, or not like someone dieting from, I don't know, like 200 kilos down to 70 and like 2 years of dieting. But 4 months of your life dieting and losing that much weight, a lot of this comes down to, for me, to what your mental state is when you're there. Like, are you feeling like you're just done with the diet? The fact that you're asking this, it probably means that there's something in you that makes you want to stop. And I think that you're probably in a perfect place to actually stop and focus on just something else. And also like probably now you're, I don't know how advanced he is. Maybe he mentioned that as well, but probably you should be gaining a little bit higher than 75 kilos during a bulk anyway. If you want to build muscle. So I think you could easily go from here, let's say to let's say 82 kilos or something like that over a couple of months. Like your first, obviously, you're gonna be more than 75 because probably now you're a depleted 75. 82 kilos, let's say over 4 months or something. Do like a shortcut at that point if you want. See where you are at. And I mean, you could just keep hovering in this, like, let's say 85 to 75 range for a while. And I think that would be completely appropriate. And then after that, maybe go lower. But I think it's helpful now to focus on something else. That's most probably what I would arrive at if I was doing like a consultation with this guy or something.
Yeah, so this is pretty much in contrast to the last guy, where the last guy was already severely overweight, just trying to avoid the diet. For this guy, he's saying, okay, so I've already spent 4 months dieting and I've lost 30 kilograms, which is a ton. Now, we don't have his training history, so that would be a factor. So, and we don't know his body fat percentage. So, I mean, if somebody was training for a long time, you could be 5'9", 75 kilograms, totally peeled, right? So we don't have any of that information. But assuming you're not super trained, I would say this would be a great time to do at least a diet break, because 4 months of, I mean, if you lost that much weight in 4 months, you were in a pretty severe deficit, and 1600 calories is quite low. So I would say this would be a good time where, and there's a lot of ways to do it. If it was me and I was really burnt out at that point, I might even just take a month and just slowly bring calories up. You might find that you actually drop a little bit more weight, if you're holding water and whatnot. But I would also be prepared mentally to gain some weight. And you might get to the point that you're on 2,500, 2,800 calories per day. and just kind of see how you feel. I can say from personal experience, that's made a big difference for me. And then at that point, decide, okay, do I want to go into a gaining phase? Like Abel said, I think that's completely reasonable. And spend a few months just kind of getting whatever strength you may have lost back and then going from there. But I think you're, you know, again, assuming normal genetics, if you're 5'9", 75 kilograms, you're probably relatively lean now. So I think you kind of have some wiggle room there.
Yeah, definitely. By the way, have you noticed that like the taller you are, like these formulas, like, okay, your height minus 100, that's like a good weight if you're lean, or that's not that good of a weight if you're lean, like you should gain more muscle, like that kind of very much favors shorter people.
So, yes, for sure. Yeah, as does the formula. Some people say, well, for every inch, it's 7 pounds of lean body mass. And I've had a couple of short friends say, oh, well, that would mean that I'm diced at 200 pounds if I was 6 feet tall. And it's like, okay, I do not think that is equivalent.
It's probably more like 4 or 5 pounds. Maybe that would be more.
I think that's probably more realistic. Yeah. Okay. Let's see how many we got. Two more. So thanks for the content. What kind of bulk do you guys recommend somebody with 25 years experience trying to eke out the last gains, non-competitor, but trying to optimize hypertrophy? It's 25 years experience. Yeah. I mean, that's quite a bit.
Yeah. Is it life experience or training experience? I mean, I just said it in this recent video that controversially, maybe, but I would still say that you probably want to gain like a kilo a month, so like 2 pounds a month, if you want to eke out the last gains and like you want to do everything for that. If like leanness is almost as big of a concern for you as gains, then of course you could just cut that in half or a quarter or main gain or whatever. But yeah, I think 1 kilo, so 2 pounds a month, is pretty much the smallest change that you can reliably track and be confident that that's actually coming from a surplus that you're gaining weight, or some of it is coming from a surplus, whatever weight you're gaining, because it's big enough of a change in your body weight that overpowers all the other fluctuations that you have, which could also make you gain weight, basically. So that's what I would say. I had some interesting or debates over that in my comment section under my last video. But yeah, you.
So I would say if you are 25 years in and you've been lifting appropriately and you've done some bulks and cuts, obviously you kind of have to temper your expectations of what's possible. I do think that it would still be the best way to see if you have anything left. I notice that sometimes even these guys who say, oh, well, I'm against bulking. Again, I've said this many times on the podcast. What they really mean is they're against dirty bulking to super high body fat percentages. But even if you think of the guys who maintain being leaner, like let's say Alberto Nunez just competed recently. I'm going to have him on again soon to talk about it. And I don't know what weight he came in at, but he's still bulking and cutting, right? All of these guys are still bulking and cutting. If you are competing, you are almost by definition in favor of bulking and cutting, right? Because obviously you diet down for the show. And then at some point in the off season, lo and behold, you're 25 plus pounds heavier. So you bulked up, right? Maybe you're not getting to, like in his case, he was 240. And I'm not saying Alberto specifically is against bulking and cutting. I'm just saying sometimes these guys who say they're against it, their actions are exactly what bulking and cutting are. So, but in any case, I would still say you would want to, I would personally, if this was my client, I would have them diet down to where they are happy with that they've maybe done over recent years, like a level that they could compare to previous years. Like, okay, well, this year I was this weight at this body fat percentage, maybe it's 10%. So that when all is said and done, after this whole long venture of trying to eke out anything else, they can see, did it actually make a difference? The reason being, because if you just bulk up to fatter and fatter levels, yeah, you might be stronger or bigger. Doesn't mean you actually made net progress at the same body fat percentage. So what I would say is, let's say you have been lifting for 25 years, you're 200 pounds and 10%, just to keep the numbers easy. and you've previously bulked up to the heaviest you've ever been was 220 at, you know, whatever the body fat percentage would be. I would say that if you really want to test it out, I would force yourself to bulk to a higher weight than you've ever been before and probably a higher body fat percentage. And I would not even attempt to diet down unless I was hitting PRs on like exercises for moderate rep ranges. So if the most you've ever done was 50 pound dumbbell curls for 10, I would be pushing the weight up, pushing the body fat up until maybe now you're doing, you know, 55 or 60 for 10, whatever that would be. And then I would see what happens. Now I can tell you from personal experience, the reason I stopped doing the bigger bulks and cuts is because I did exactly this and it did not net me anything the last time I did it. So the heaviest I had been was 205. And I really pushed things up to about 220. And I took 2 years to do this. I dieted back down. And actually on the way down, it really did seem like I had gained a couple of pounds. But by the time I got back down to that particularly lean, like 185, it was like, oh, this is actually the same 185 as the last year. So at some point, just being lean for long enough, I just did not net anything. But still, with that being said, if you were to say, Dave, I want you to do all that effort, gain as much as you can, see if you truly have anything else left, I would still follow that method if I did not have any health concerns about, you know, being that heavy or life situations. I would say, okay, well, this time I'm going to bulk to 230. I'm going to do it over a year. I'm going to slowly gain, you know, maybe it's half a pound to 1 pound per week. I would try to get as strong as possible in the moderate rep ranges. I would hold that for probably another year. And again, this is like most extreme, been lifting for almost 2 decades, trying to get anything else out of it. Hold that for another year, really try to quote unquote solidify the progress. And then I would diet down. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe there was another 1 to 2 pounds of muscle gained from that. Like, I'm not saying it would, but I'd be open to it because that's a pretty extreme method to see if you have anything left.
Yep. We should do like an episode just on this, like one time, like, I mean, just on like the whole bulking thing. I feel like there's just so much things to talk about there.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what I would do. Anything to add there, Abel?
No, just a very, very brief question on that. So do you, when you say that you came down from the 220 and at one point it seemed like you were better off, but then at the like leanest state, it was not so much the case. Did you like, were you able to compare like measurements, or was it just like, as far as I remember, I didn't think as good?
No, that's actually, so this was 2017. I bulked up to 220. I definitely was the strongest I had been, not as much as you would think. Like the 220 was not that much stronger than the 205, to be honest. But those last 10 pounds was probably done a little faster than it should have been. I was definitely getting uncomfortable with how fat I was, relatively speaking. But my arms, like I said, were 17 and a half inches. I was doing, I don't even know, everything was significantly stronger. I mean, I have records for everything. But to answer your question, so I had dieted down. This is right when I was finishing up with dental school. And I was about 192. And I remember, and I had to have a small surgery, but I had to stop lifting for a few weeks and I didn't diet, but I always wondered, like, did this kind of mess things up a little bit? I hit 192 and my waistline was the same as it was at, I think, 189 before. Mm. And I was like, okay. And now, you know, anybody who's taken a lot of waistline measurements knows that they could vary quite a bit. You know, I could have been a little bit more depleted and not had as much volume before. There's a lot of factors go into that. But my arms are also a little bit bigger. I think I had maintained 17 inch arms even down to about 195. Like, things were clearly trending in a pretty solid direction. I would actually say to this day that, and my summer 2020, it's hard to know which one was better because the summer 2020 was my best lean, my leanest state. And then that summer of 2017 was a little bit heavier. Point being, it was like, okay, cool. I actually did net something. And then I continued dieting. And like I said, by the time I got down to about 182, I was leaner than I had been previously because I was lighter than I had been previously. But at each given weight, I was like, it doesn't really look like anything happened, you know. But I would still be down. Like I said, it's not practical for my life anymore for a lot of reasons. But if I was, I don't know, I would be interested to see, okay, if I took, you know, just go the whole Jeffrey Verdi Schofield route, go to 230 and see what happens. But it would be very impractical for my life at this point, and I think quite unhealthy.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And I mean, probably the responsible thing to do. The reason I'm asking that is because, so I was talking a lot with this client of mine about bulking and like the relationship between bulking and body fat. And I think he put it really well that it's not so like, yes, you have a genetic limit, but you almost have like a separate genetic limit for different body fat percentages. So like you might have reached your 8% body fat genetic ceiling, but your whatever 12% one is probably higher, and then your 20% one is higher. And so like, could that be a valid hypothesis here that on the way down to, let's say, 195, because it's easier to hold muscle at 195 at a slightly higher body fat than at 180, let's say, you could actually like represent those or present those gains that you had, but you didn't gain so much muscle so that it would be significant enough to show at 180, because it's just harder to hold muscle there. But if you, let's say, you stayed between 195 and then you went back to, let's say, not 220, but 230, and then back to 200. So if you did it a bit longer, eventually you could have gained enough so that it even would have shown at 180. Maybe I'm pushing it a bit too far with that, but
I know, I totally think it could be reasonable to assume that, because you do see that, like, it's very possible that, okay, I and others maybe are more predisposed to having a higher body fat percentage, grew up as fat kids and whatnot, and maybe at a 16% body fat, I could hold my own with other people who would be also 16%, but some of those people are like an Alberto Nunez or a Steve Hall, or even like a Alex Leonidas or Alpha Destiny. These guys grew up lean, were naturally lean. It's easier for them to be, let's say, 10%. So maybe at 16%, we'd be comparable. But by the time we tried to get down to 8%, I or somebody else who is not, as genetically predisposed to that would lose significantly more muscle, right? I mean, that is absolutely, I mean, in addition to just having very long limbs and whatnot, that's one of the reasons I just have no interest in dieting down to a true 6 to 7% body fat, because I just know for me, everybody loses more muscle mass. But you'll hear some of these guys like Steve or Roberto, and it's like, well, the last 4 weeks were really tough. It's like, okay, I think for some of us, the last 16 weeks could be really tough. Like literally the whole prep, anything below 11 to 12% would be miserable, and you'd lose so much more muscle mass. And then even kind of the opposite of what you were saying, where somebody's, you know, 18% or whatever, they still have potential. A lot of people notice that their, let's say, contest lean potential is improving, even though their off season isn't getting any more muscular because they've gotten better at the dieting process, right? So I think probably the best example was Jeff Alberts gaining something like 10 pounds of muscle from one season to the next. I would bet his off season weight, he maybe had 0 to 2 pounds more lean body mass, right? But the dieting process was so much better. So you could say his potential at, let's say, whatever, 6 or 7% went up dramatically.
Yeah. And we're been doing it for, so we can move on, just like a brief comment. Like the thing that we always say about how, like, we make fun of the people who bulk up, and they're like, okay, so I gained, let's say, like 20 pounds, maybe half of it is muscle. And then they diet down, it's like 2 pounds of difference. And it's like, well, okay, bro. So yes, probably it was not half of it that was muscle, but maybe they are not as ridiculous as we think, or like to assume. It's just that, like, you will lose a portion of the lean mass gains that you made. I mean, obviously part of it is just that part of fat is lean mass, but some of the actual like contractile tissue, or what's Derek's favorite phrase? You're actually losing as you're dieting down. So yeah, maybe you actually gained, let's say, I don't know, 5 pounds as an intermediate on like a pretty good bulk, but you're only going to be able to like present two of those when you're at 12% yeah. body fat.
Yeah, no, I think it's totally reasonable for an intermediate who gains 20 pounds over, you know, an extended period of time to say half of it was lean. Doesn't mean half of it was contractile tissue, but certainly half of it could be lean. I mean, just the food in your stomach is lean technically, and you're going to have more of that going on. So,
yeah.
All right. So last one, we'll get this final one from Brandon here. Best way to deload: less sets, less weight, less reps, or some combo thereof. I have a pretty boring answer for this, so I don't know if you want to go first or.
Oh yeah, mine is very short. I usually just say take 3 to maybe 10 days off, and when you feel reinvigorated, then just go again. And I suggest like if you want, you can go in and do some light stuff, but I'm totally fine with just taking time completely off.
Yeah, I think deloads are one of the most boring topics to me that are outside of a competitor or like a powerlifter or something like that. I just think it does not matter. You know, there's so much evidence now, like we talked about before, about how much you can do or not do and maintain. And the fact that people spend so much time talking about all these different deload methods, because I've done many different kinds. So there was, you know, you could say, well, go in there and just do lighter reps. And I knew one guy who was lighter weight, was a very big advocate of that. And he would say, well, because it's not going to be that stressful for your system, which we know is not true. This is what the fat used to preach. So I'd go in there and I'd try to set 30 rep PRs. You know, I'd say, oh, well, what can I, and I'd go to failure basically, but it was 30 reps. So it wasn't going to tax me, right? Which is not accurate. And then other people could say, well, you could keep the weight heavy. Some people are really strong advocates, keep the weight heavy, but do half the reps. So if you're going to go heavy for 8 to failure, still use that weight, but do 4. I actually do think that's a better method because you're not going to be pushing yourself nearly as hard and you're still getting that weight in your hands. But if you're deloading because of potential injuries and not just you're fatigued, then obviously you don't want to have equally heavy weight in your hands. You can still, I mean, plenty of people get injured not on the last rep, right? So I would not recommend that either. And then you could do some combination of, well, I'm doing lighter weight and I'm doing fewer reps. And the only thing I really find that valuable for is to get you a little bit more excited. So this is more of a personal thing, but I have found even for myself, like I as much as I love this lifestyle and the gym, if I have a week off, I am not thinking to myself, oh man, I miss the gym so much. I have other things in my life I'm doing. And you're speaking to somebody who literally works out almost every morning on vacation. Like I personally enjoy that. And it's a big part of my life that I enjoy. When I have friends visit, it's like, okay, well, we will go to the gym while you're here. And so I'm a big advocate of that personally. But if I have to take a week off or something, I just don't think about that much. I just do other things. If you are somebody who finds that kind of gets you off the wagon, then I do think some lighter sessions can motivate you to want to do more. When I've done this personally, I'll find, okay, I'm going to go in and do 2 sessions, but it's not even close to failure. Because I'm now moving around and I'm doing things, I think, oh man, I can't wait until next week, but I can actually push this as much as I want to. So I have personally found that, but I don't even deload that much anymore because my volume is not very high. I think, you know, lifting 3 days a week, you just don't need to deload. But if I go away or something, like I was just doing a lot of hiking in Glacier National Park. I took a full week off. Did not matter at all. Came back, was exactly as strong, and it was just something to do. So
yeah, it's definitely like also a mental break at that point, which can be nice, like changing scenery. But Mike Israetel, I just remembered, had actually a cool suggestion in one of his videos where like how can you make deloading more fun? And yeah, like some people don't need it at all. Like just go do other things. But like there were some cool suggestions. For example, like, I don't know, if you wanted to play around with some new exercises, like test the setup, whatever, but like you don't want to do it while you're doing your regular workouts because it's just going to detract from time and also energy. But now it would be the time. Like, yeah, play around with that machine that always looked cool, or try this funky setup. And then another thing I wanted to play around with, once I like, for some reason, I just love like mapping things out on spreadsheets. Like, it's very stupid, but I mapped it out one time. Like, this, it could be like called the rotating deload and volume escalation pattern. I should like pattern that before Mike Israetel comes up with an acronym. So TVH, I don't know, it's like a 15 letter acronym. But so it would be, I don't know, escalating volumes on like, let's say, all your presses. And then 3 weeks later, beginning to escalate it on pulls. But by the time the pulls would get too high, you take a week off from the presses. And then basically everything would overlap. So when it's the highest volume here, it would be the lowest volume here, so that like you're never overworking yourself. And because we don't know how much volume you need, like at one point you would do more and less from everything, because we don't know if you really need to deload or not. At one point you would take a week off from everything. But yeah, couldn't figure out the perfect pattern yet. But
sure. So this is a question sent in by Dave McConey for you, Abel. And that is on the topic of specialization phases. So this goes back to, I don't know if anybody remembers John Romaniello from T Nation, and he had this specialization article, and I actually sent him my thoughts on it, and he's like, oh, I really like that, and I just never ended up doing it. I kind of put together a program for it. Not surprisingly, it was a chest and arm specialization. And but I never really did it. But there's a lot of talk. I just had Basement Bodybuilding on, where we talked about the idea of shifting volume. And to me, it's kind of like, well, if you already, you know, like I said earlier, well, if I did 20 sets versus 10 sets, I didn't notice a difference. So you would think, okay, if you did notice a difference, then, well, one, would the specialization phase even help anything to do more volume for something? But then two, I clearly was recovering from the 20 sets. It just wasn't better. So if that's the case, then why would I need to take away volume from, let's say, back to do more chest volume if I was already recovering from 20 sets for everything, right? So that's one argument against the whole idea of specialization, that look, it just doesn't matter. You're well within your recovery capacity. It just doesn't do you any good to do more. The other argument could say, well, somehow just if we can generate more resources or have more resources to generate growth for a certain muscle group, that will be more optimal. And in a way, kind of going back to the self-experimentation, I'm almost considering it in the sense that, well, what do I have to lose at this point? If it's already like, well, nothing is happening, why not just say, I'm literally going to stop training X muscle group, or do it once every 2 weeks and do three times the volume on this and just see if anything happens. And I've done that for movements. Like when I was working on my overhead press, I was not doing much benching. I think I was doing three sets of chest a week and that was it. And I was doing 12 sets or whatever it was for overhead press. And that was when I hit my highest overhead press. But as far as for muscle groups, just wondering your thoughts on that. If you think either for self-experimentation or just legitimately noticing results, the idea of really taking away elsewhere and adding something. I mean, you kind of did that with back, right?
Yeah. I was thinking about that quite a bit as well. And I like that segment in your podcast where he said that his arms started growing when he finally reduced his volume elsewhere. I would note that it comes back to what I said earlier about, you know, don't take these things at face value. Okay. Can you tell me exactly everything that you did then? Because, you know, if he also, while reducing volume on other things, he also moved arm stuff to the beginning of his workout. That's also a non-trivial factor. Maybe it's not like a massive thing, but you know, I mean, if you're performing everything in a fresher state, that could matter. So it's one of those things that if this is the case, it's kind of a funky reason for that. It's like, there's like a total amount of protein turnover or something that your body can facilitate. And then, yeah, like it's just now spread too thin. So if you take away, especially some pretty large muscles that there is a lot of area to cover in terms of like how much protein breakdown there is, how much needs to be replenished, and also just, you know, hard hitter exercises. Like if you take out hamstrings, for example, and you're not doing hip hinges anymore, like that's quite some taxing work that is now eliminated. So is it that? I mean, it could be, but it's, I don't know. To me, I just never did it so far. And even now, I'm only doing it for convenience sake because, mm-hmm. you know, like quad work. If I'm putting it in the beginning of my workout, which is probably the ideal place to place those because it's just, it takes a lot out of you and I'm just not going to be firing myself up for that at the end of my workout. So if I put it there, then man, it's that is going to affect other things for sure. If I put it at the end, then probably I'm just going to skip it because by the time I will be too drained. So it's basically that's the reason. I didn't even want to skip it. I just ended up skipping it. But I also heard the same thing from Brian Miner when we talked about progressive overload. And I basically brought up the same point to him that like, well, but it shouldn't be like it's individual muscles, like locally you're breaking things down and they get repaired. Like, why would it help my chest if I'm skipping quad work? And he said like, yeah, you know, like that makes sense. But the amount of times I have seen with power lifters whose knees got injured or something, and we had to take out squats for a while, that during those times, their bench presses shot up, that I'm inclined to think that there is something to it. So yeah, I'm optimistic about it, but I don't know. It's just, to me, the cost benefit thing has to be weighed, especially for like an intermediate for sure. Like if you're going to take away something that is otherwise like non-trivial for you to improve something else, I mean, man, like you really, really need to want to improve that other thing for that to be worth it, I think.
Yeah, no, that is interesting that he says that. I would wonder though, how much of that is that a neurological aspect in the sense of a powerlifter because there was more learning skill devoted towards the bench press? Something I mentioned in the Basement Bodybuilding podcast was like, okay, so in theory, you could have your upper body maximized by never training lower body. I mean, does that sound intuitively correct? I mean, that's just, I can't imagine that actually being accurate. So plus you remember those squats are producing a lot of growth hormone, which helps build biceps, right? So,
oh wait, so you think that you couldn't develop an optimal like upper body or like a maxly developed upper body without training the lower body as well?
Well, I've heard people say that actually. That's not what I'm saying, but I have heard people say that they think the discrepancy just would not work. Like you just couldn't have somebody who never trained lower body get maximally large upper body. So they've actually said the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. I'm more just saying that if you believe what we're talking about here in terms of, well, if you take away from one for the other, that would lead to the argument of, well, if you want a maximally developed upper body, you would need to not train your lower body. I just don't think they're even necessarily that related. I mean, I certainly don't think that's true. I certainly don't think that, wow, we'd all have bigger upper bodies if we just never trained legs. I don't think that's true. In the other direction, I don't see why that would be true, but I could understand somebody saying that. Like, could you imagine somebody who just had literal, like we always talk about people who like chicken legs or whatever, but actually just no leg development and a maximally developed upper body? Would the body just not allow that for some reason? Like it just wouldn't, it would just be too asymmetric. I'm not sure. Again, like why would that be the case physiologically? I think also just you're never going to see that because nobody who cares about maximally developing their body is just going to not train their lower body, you know?
Yeah. But also like, so the thing is that, like, can you imagine a bicep, like an arm that looks like, I don't know, like who is like if you look at the arm of Jeff Alberts, let's say, mm-hmm. like, could you imagine that arm on a body that is otherwise like completely underdeveloped, like zero pec development, zero shoulder, like nothing, but has this like extremely well developed, like muscular, like seasoned looking arm.
Yeah.
There is such a thing as it just doesn't fit. I don't know why, but it just no. But maybe it does, but just nobody does it. I don't.
That's the thing. I mean, I think one, nobody does it, right? Like, who would possibly do that? But I could see if somebody tried to make some argument as, okay, it's just not going, like, the body would almost stimulate muscle growth elsewhere. I'm not sure. One example I can tell you, though, I have two friends who were, they would bowl a lot and in high school, they were not otherwise active. And their right biceps were comically bigger than their left biceps. And but it wasn't to the point that you would just see it standing out with nothing else. But if they flex their right bicep compared to the left, I mean, it was quite noticeable. Even now, which could get into a whole epigenetic thing on, okay, what you do when you're quite young, having a factor there. But yeah, obviously, we're never going to see this carried out over years and years. But I'm not sure what the answer would be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Brett Pilon has, if anybody wants to check it out, was with Kino Buddy, an episode where he mentioned something about this, that, you know, it could be that when you really have a tough time developing a muscle group, it could be that you just used up your quote unquote muscle allowance. So there is like a certain amount, like, let's say you can have like 30 pounds of extra muscle on your frame when you start. And if you gain a bunch of it on your legs, like maybe that's why you're, I don't know, your chest has a tough time developing now. Like, now that, in that, put it that way, I think is BS.
Yeah, I don't believe
it. Yeah. But yeah, these things have been around for a long time in various forms.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right, guys. So, ninth Q&A wrapped up. If you have more questions, post down below on YouTube. Some people email me, but probably better to post on YouTube or Instagram, and we will get to most of them.
Yes, indeed.
All right, Abel, I don't know how we're going to split this up, but in case it just goes on mine, where can people find you?
Yeah, it's SSD Abel on YouTube and Abel Fit Stuff on Instagram, still, surprisingly.